And I have a backup recorder over here. We have to feed the technology gods.
Yes, we do.
So I like to find a little sacred space together before we get into the questions. It's always wonderful to feel in, sense in, relax in, root in to your embodied presence, Madame Rosa. And as we co-create through this interview process, Rose, let's invite and welcome all of the guides and angels welcoming the embodied practice and the wisdom from your embodied practice, your experience, and whatever else will serve the future for this emerging profession, yoga therapy, yoga, emerging leadership through yoga. And then just notice what lands in your body, mind, in your heart, mind. And I invite you to add some of your own words for our moment here, if you wish.
Words that come up are presence, vibration, wisdom, nature, and seeding, as in seeds, seeding the land, seeding the future.
Wonderful. I'll just ring us out. Thank you. So this first question, I'll just raise my blind here, relates to, again, embodying your experience of your personal practice and then the work that you've done in the world. Okay, so that's the shape of the container from which I'd hope you'd answer the questions from. And this first one really is about your invocation, your initiation, having that project in mind, whatever one you choose to use for today's interview. How did your inspiration arise? What did you think, feel, and sense? And where did it come from?
Okay, so the questions are, I should take notes here so I can remember. I'm a little clouded today. So how did inspiration arise?
Yeah. What did you think, feel, and or sense? And then if you can locate it, where did it come from, if that's available? How did it emerge?
Okay. So we're starting down this path of yoga. I think for me, it's always been about healing, and that I knew from a very young age that I was supposed to be serving others in a healing capacity. And there were many explorations of it. One of my big memories about this is making potions in the backyard with my brother. And they were always mud-based potions, and he would never eat them. but that was my first kind of journey into really kind of working with others in that capacity. There was a lot of it, I think, within family as well, and contention between my younger brother and I, because I was always trying to help him and take care of him, and he was rightfully so, you are not the parent. Don't do that. So I've always known that that was to be my journey and that was to be my pathway. It's just innate, coming into the world with that. And in 2004, I had done yoga for years, but in 2004, I was in a program in Taiwan with a monastery, and we were learning about monastic life, humanistic Buddhist monastic life. So we were in an ashram and we were meditating, and it was Pure Land Buddhism mixed with Chan Buddhism. And I, at that point, had a regular yoga practice, and there was no yoga. We were doing Tai Chi or Kung Fu kind of stuff. But I was doing some yoga myself. And I remember I taught one of the nuns yoga in one of the places. And then participants in the program said, "Hey, since you do so much yoga, you should teach us." And I was like, "All right." And so, you know, they got me like a room, and I taught a yoga class in the room. And it was the first time I think I really felt purely me. I mean, I wasn't nervous per se. I'm trained as a classical pianist, so I'm used to being, you know, I mean, that seems harder. Everybody knows what you're playing and where all the mistakes are going to be. Because they've all heard the piece before, played the piece before. So that it was fraught with nerves for me. But just getting up in front of the group wasn't, because they didn't know what was coming. And to be honest, I didn't really know what was coming. I just kind of let it flow. And it was in that moment I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to teach. And that was really the big shove to get me on that path. Concurrently, my regular practice was with Amy Weintraub at a gym in Tucson. And she was always talking about, you know, depression. And I had had a really severe depressive episode. So I kind of got that. And I had really bad anxiety. But, you know, I wasn't really thinking of that as a pathway. And the rest of it is really being carried along and opportunities being presented. You know, I was like, oh, I'm going to do my yoga teacher training. And then it was, oh, you're doing that. Well, I'm going to get you on the sub list and you can sub my class because you've been a student for several years. You know the student, you know the class. And, oh, hey, I'm doing this training coming up, you know, Life Force Yoga for depression and anxiety. And do you want to help me with it? And yes. And, oh, and so it was such an organic movement forward in terms of trajectory with what I do with the emotions and what I do with the mind. And, you know, this is really the gift of past lifetimes and the gifts of healing, and for whatever reason, coming in with this knowledge of this is what I'm supposed to be doing in my life with others. And there's this deep healing that needs to happen within myself, and that all of this then has... All of this training has a lot of it. The physicality of yoga has been around managing my own physical issues and uniquely preparing me for future damages, which is really interesting. The Yoga Sutras say, "Heyam duhukam anagatam." The only pain that can be prevented is that which has yet to come. And while I was not able to prevent pains from accidents, I was actually uniquely prepared to support myself through those major issues, concussions and neck injuries, in a way that I think a lot of people are not able to handle themselves. And,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So this weaving of these various points of connection that I hear you referring to from your time in Taiwan, the current yoga teacher, and then the subbing, and then the teacher training, and then that prescience that I know about you and that you work from a lot about the emerging future, right? So you've already named part and parcel of what this emergent frame of reference is really trying to hold and put some language to. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. So as this connection comes more clearly into language right here now, as you reflect on the what you actually did to move it forward, you spoke about a few moments of connection, right? Meetings and the organic process. As it landed in you, can you speak, please, about the further clarification of how your attention landed on a vision that you could actually do something about? How your attention landed in or on your vision that actually carried you forward, something that you could do something with? Just let it percolate up. Remember, because we're still in this initiatory first phase, gathering the energies.
So for me, I think one of the things I learned during my process is that I'm kinesthetic. And so I really operate from a place of feeling first, and then everything has to be translated. And it has to be translated into words, into imagery, and into communication, and even into thought process. Because operating from feeling states, there's not a thought process to it. It's just, you just do it because you just do it because this is what my body is telling me to do. So with that in mind, in those teaching moments, I would have these resonances, resonating experiences where I could see somebody doing something and I could feel within my body what was needed to counter it, to support adjusting. I call it my Jedi sense now. My Jedi skills have been honed so I can see things going on in a different way, and it gets kind of, actually, I don't even want to say that. I'm just going to own it. It's almost, in many ways, an energetic x-ray, that here's where the energy is getting stuck and here's what needs to move through. So in the beginning stages, in this understanding of myself, it's, yes, yoga is the pathway. And here's how I can support people in moving this energy, which was then coupled with this, what we would call a vasana in the Yoga Sutras, a pattern of behavior brought forward from previous lifetimes. This vasana for me is this vasana of yoga wisdom, and the yoga wisdom that is there, and the I couldn't remember parts of the body after I had my concussion. I couldn't remember, what to call, I'd be tapping my leg and this is what, looking for the word for leg. But I could remember the Yoga Sutras and these intense Sanskrit words and names for the poses. I couldn't remember any of the names of the poses in English, but I could remember them all in Sanskrit, which really spoke to me at a deep level. This is rooted within me in ways that I don't know how to speak to yet, and that we may not understand in that kind of Western methodology. So coupled with that strength of wisdom and then the kinesthetic understanding of the body, because if that's where my thought process is within my body all the time and is in a feeling state, then the understanding of the body is innate. So bringing all of those together, it was, I have no choice but to be working with people therapeutically and helping them apply these and create new samskaras and new vasanas for health and healing for themselves, with this understanding that yoga itself is not healing and I am not a healer that of other people, a healer of myself, that this is the tool, the technique that I use when working with others to give them the power to make these significant changes within themselves and long-lasting changes within themselves.
So in this, okay, wonderful, thank you. So as I listen in to the field of your awareness from this perspective of the generativity, the shared generativity, the healing space that clearly has landed in your system, your structure, your cellular awareness from before into the present and then into the future, the way you work with others. This next piece wants to tease apart this capacity not just to see together or to discover together, right? That co-creative component that you indirectly referred to. But if we open that lens a little bit wider, you talked about your students. Where else were there other people who began to support you as you directed your vision and your capacity through these experiences in your own life and in your own practice more clearly into the world? How did they begin, these seeds begin to sprout into recognizable messages or practices, first from your own perspective and then into the collective? What did you find there as you listened more deeply?
So coming from this place of knowing that I'm supposed to be working with others and serving others and supporting them to heal themselves, and that the body is going to be my journey to do that, and that yoga is going to be the lens, shifting that. I mean, I had gone to school for social work, so I had a sociology degree and had intended to become to do a master's in social work. And I changed, like, nope, I'm going to do this yoga thing. I'm going to do this yoga thing instead. A lot of support and direction came from teachers and cohorts. So, of course, Amy was really kind of instrumental in directing me down the emotional pathway in using yoga for supporting people with emotional upset and depression, anxiety. Then there was, my other teacher, Maria Mendola, who really, she's a phenomenal yoga therapy teacher, and I was lucky enough to have her as one of my teacher trainers in my initial teacher training program. So I got a lot of, within her, I saw a mind like mine with this capacity for remembrance of the body and application of things. So, and she really, you know, I would talk to her on the phone sometimes, and I would have sessions with her, and she'd be like, oh, Rose, this is amazing. This is amazing. So she really kind of would push me and always a cheerleader. She actually taught me to be a cheerleader for others and taught me to have excitement and joy in the successes of other people. I had not, didn't really do that and hadn't been, no one had actually taught me to be what it meant and what it felt like to feel that praise and enjoyment in your successes. I hadn't received that without some sort of like, but, oh, you want to do this amazing thing? Oh my gosh, Rose, that's so wonderful. You should totally do that. You know, prior to that, it was always, oh, that's so cool. Well, have you thought about this? And how are you going to do this? And there was always this, you know, caveats attached to it. So she really taught me that excitement, and to receive that excitement really lit the fire within me to explore things further. And then my current teacher, Ramajyoti Vernon, who just, again, that encouragement, and in places where she's really just demonstrated an absolute trust and belief in me as an instructor. And from places like taking a workshop with her, and, you know, she needs to do something with somebody else, and, or, you know, and she just hands me the microphone and says, Rose, you do it. And I think, what? Oh my gosh, why me? You have other senior teachers here who have been working with you far longer, and you're handing me the microphone to do the other side or whatever. And I learned from her really that, I want to say, the audacity to have complete confidence within myself as a gift from Rama, because I thought, well, like, if she trusts me and I trust her, then, you know, she sees something within me that maybe I'm not, I'm believing those constrictive thought patterns that have been established in my life. And she sees that I can do this. And if I trust her explicitly, that means I have to trust myself explicitly. And so she really helped to find that confidence. So within the three of them, there was very much this sense of, here's a direction. Here's, from Amy, here's a direction, a pathway. From Maria, here's joy at the exploration of this pathway. And from Rama, here is the gift of trust. And there were many other, you know, comments and support from friends and from my husband along the way. But those three gifts, the Magi, right? The three gifts of the Magi, those were really important gifts for me. And in moments of distrust,
Okay.
Those gifts remain, the essence of those gifts remain for me.
Okay, great. So I'm listening in as you shape the container of your becoming, right? As you witness the essence of what they saw in you that enabled you to see in you, and then to claim it.
Yes.
And so this quality of becoming as the trust built, the confidence built, the gift of direction built in you, we're touching into this quality of what we name in the you process, the crystallizing of something, right? It's no different than an alchemical process, that something comes to life and there's a form or a shape that one then begins to have a relationship with, right? That's what you were basically naming without naming it, that the relationship, first with other, then with self, the benefit of the ongoing practice and the teachings, that begins to land somewhere. So this is more about the places and spaces that are the host environment for you to practice. And so if you could spend a little time as your heart and mind and body got more integrated, right, that the emergence of you as teacher, instructor, as you called it, was supported. The gifts, the Magi behind you saying, go, go. Where did you do these experiments? How did you communicate your transformation process? How did you communicate what you were learning in this enduring journey? And this is this place of continuing to experiment, to learn by doing, failing fast, encountering the obstacles, just like on the heroine's journey. So this is kind of the meat, the guts of how you muddled through, sometimes we call it in coaching, or as the presence of your gift began to be viscerally felt, what was it that you landed on? Because it has to go somewhere, right? It's not just awareness anymore, that it's in action.
So always for me, there's this sense of know it within yourself first. So a lot of experiments happened with me at home and really doing these things like, oh, I'm just going to try this. Perhaps sometimes to a detriment, I've done that with herbs as well. Like, oh, I'm just going to try this and see what happens. And Maria has said, Rose, you really shouldn't do that. I'm like, well, how else am I going to know unless I build this relationship with this? And so there was this experiment of building relationship with practices. And so I would set out like, oh, I'm going to do this every day for 40 days and just see what happens. I'm just really curious to see what happens if I do this. And invariably, I would be in a class and whatever I was practicing would get pulled out of me by somebody in the class. Like, oh, they need this. They desperately need this. So I would start to share that in what at the beginning were just these kind of gentle yoga classes. I had been told by my yoga teacher trainers and Amy in the very beginning stages of teaching, you're really good at working with beginners. And you're really good at teaching gentle yoga, which is not easy to come out of a teacher training and be able to do that. So, all right. So I kind of just went with that and was doing these very generic gentle yoga classes, all, you know, at the gym and, you know, subbing here and there. But needing to bring in the why for the practices. So needing to start out with a little teaching on, you know, ahimsa, nonviolence, or, satya, being true to yourself as you're doing this. So those things needed to kind of start coming into play for me as a teacher. I can't just, even to this day, I can't just, okay, let's start moving. Like, that's just not an option for me. There has to be some reason for why we're doing this. Otherwise, it feels like a waste of time. My time and your time to do that. So those things started coming in, and sometimes they would come in the form of the body. And then when I met Rama in 2007, so I'd been teaching for about 2 years at that point, and had this very confusing experience with the breath a week beforehand, and which I see now as the gift. The gift of here, this woman's about to come into your life, so you need to understand the depth of how the breath really works to fully be able to appreciate what you're about to do with this woman, how she's about to drastically change your life. And so that was the gift of back breathing and spinal extension and the exhale and all of that. And so through that experience, then it's like, oh, I really need to be shifting this language to therapeutic yoga classes and bringing in language about the back and helping the back to heal and helping to strengthen the back. And one of my students was a chiropractor, and she would drop these little nuggets about what was happening with the body when we were doing these breathing practices. So then I started to shift from, you know, yoga studios open and they close. And I ended up teaching at her, she moved locations. She had a center, she had a bigger center. And through a series of events, I ended up teaching at her office. And I had a class there at her office. And we shared a lot of, you know, I would refer and she would refer to me, and I ended up working with a number of her clients over the years. and you know, she and her wife would come to class as well. So really began to discover that I wasn't very suited to the yoga studio model, because the yoga studio model includes a lot of people who are already practicing yoga and already know what they're doing. And that's a no in quotation marks for the record. And that restructuring awareness and bringing awareness to deeper understandings of the body was met with a lot of resistance. So there was a time for many years where I did not teach in a yoga studio at all. I was teaching for staff at the VA. I was teaching in a pulmonary office. I was teaching at a hospital, a number of hospitals. I was teaching at a chiropractor's office, and not in a yoga studio. And I would have these forays into yoga studios. So currently, I'm teaching at a yoga studio that is actually suited to me in a way that yoga studios never have been before, and an avenue I never considered. But again, the universe says, this is where you need to be, and this is what you need to be doing. I've been teaching in a pool, in a therapy pool, and all of the bodies coming to the therapy pool are non-yoga bodies, and I would say 90% of them have never done yoga before in their lives, but they're coming to the therapy pool because here's this woman who's doing this practice who really understands the body. Or as my boss at the pool says, we have a real yoga teacher. Like, she travels and does programs and stuff. She's a real yoga teacher. She has a book and really kind of advertises that. So, but it took me a while to really understand, this is what I'm providing, and this is the environment that this needs to be provided in. That I want to work with people who really need these practices, who have no access to these practices. Somebody who goes to yoga studios already has access to those practices. They've got a teacher, they've got a relationship. They may find benefit working with me. I won't say that they won't, because of course we could find benefit working with everybody, but that the people that I am best suited to working with are people who have no understanding of the body, mm-hmm. Who don't feel their bodies, but need some sort of relief. And I can bring them to those places because I've got that, you know, that vasana of yoga in my energetics and in my life. I've got this understanding of the body. And because my language skills come, yes, I have the large vocabulary from my education level and from my parents, but my communication skills come from the person that I'm working with and from the person in front of me. So if your language is English is your second language and your vocabulary is 1,000 words, I find myself speaking to you in a way where we're only using those 1,000 words. And if I am introducing a new word, I'm telling you what that word means. Or, I worked with a blind woman once. We have no visual aspects, so here's how I'm going to teach this. And, or I have taught in Spanish before to people, and with my limited Spanish vocabulary, which is probably 1,000, 2,000 words. So it's really that that awareness of understanding what my strengths are as a teacher and as a person, what my worth is, and who is best suited to receive that support in the world. So yoga studios, yeah, okay, there's a place for that, but non-yoga people, that's really the meat, that's really the juice.
Right, thank you. Thank you. So in my listening practice, I'm tracking or tracing what you had mentioned earlier relative to the vasana, that you carry a personal awareness of an embodied cultural context, let's just call it, that is getting more and more personal to you as you embody and practice with others whose bodies you're listening to and whose cultural context you're also listening through.
Yes.
And so if now we begin to tease apart, Rose, this moving from me to we, and I would suggest that your we-ness that you described, embodying these contexts and then having a lot of very specific personal opportunities to reify, to really identify and name that it wasn't yours, but it was moving through you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we call this other ways of knowing. This is the non-dual essential vocabulary of knowing that we don't know. But could you please talk a little bit about the knowing that we don't know together until we join in the relational field? That's what you just said, that I learn from the person in front of me about which skill, tool, practice, set of words do I need to offer. So I'm wanting to go a little bit into sacred space here so that we're not thinking, but the being quality, that non-dual part of you, and I know that in you, actually can pull up some language so that others can hold hope for that part in themselves too, the readers. Mm-hmm.
So the other way of knowing starts first with being with yourself. And this, I know these things about myself because, I spend all my time in this. I spend all my time with me. There are other people, but I do spend a lot of time alone. And because my body is so communicative, because I'm so kinesthetic, my body often overrides experiences, or not experience, my body often overrides thought process. So I could be in a thought process, or I could be in a knowing, like, oh yeah, this is what's supposed to happen here. And my body can speak out to me in an intensity of pain or a shock, or sometimes there is the gift of, it's almost a stroke on my cheek. And I've come to understand that when I feel that sense, like somebody is literally stroking my cheek, that somebody is saying to me, somebody outside of me is saying, I need you to pay attention intensely right now, because something is happening and you're not quite seeing it. So that sense of again, because it's as being kinesthetic, it's all coming to me through my body. And in the very beginning stages, and even to this day, I always know that I'm in the right place and I'm doing the right thing when I start to drool. And it's that my mouth fills intensely with saliva. And, I get to swallow it, but, you know, sometimes it will literally come out on my mat because this drool, and it's this very visceral of experience of things are flowing. So most signs come to me in the form of physical sensations. There are also times where there are visual aspects to things, shadows appearing, sparkling lights appearing, like like a twinkle light coming on for a moment and going off. And then in rare occasions, there have actually been sounds, and it's usually a sound, not a voice, not a word, but a sound. And on one occasion, something falling from the ceiling, literally falling in the room above me, as I was doing something. So this sense of knowing, of information coming from somewhere else, it starts with that connection to self first, and it always keeps coming back to me, and I'm talking the royal me. It always comes back to us, the royal us, in the sense that to be able to share something and to go forward, there has to be the capacity for the inner listening developed and the strength to hold the wisdom that's about to come forth when we connect with other people. Because that then leads to this co-creation. And if I know how to listen to myself, the signs and symbols being presented to me by the person in front of me, the universe, the trans-dimensional beings that are around me, the energy body, whatever. If I can be grounded and present within myself, then I have the capacity to hear that. And really, what that means is, as I'm stepping into the space with one individual or five individuals or 10 individuals, my ego disappears, in the sense that I'm not thinking about what we're going to do next. I'm not thinking about what's happening outside the room or what's happening on the mat. Do those things come in? Yes, they come in. How do you know when they come in, when somebody's teaching? That's when the teacher loses their train of thought. It's these momentary distractions, like, oh shoot, that thought popped into my head and now I can't remember where we were or what we were doing. So some days I'm 100% present and the ego is not there and that information is flowing through and we are co-creating the practice together. Other days, and I'd say most of the time, 75% presence, which I think is a really good number to be aiming for. I think it's a 25% distraction, that's okay. But that 75% is, great. That's a goal.
Beautiful, thank you. So as we wind down here, there's this interesting moment that I'm hearing you kind of ping, as if we were ringing a bell or striking a bowl, that as it crystallizes, right, as the knowing becomes available from whatever dimension, that me to we trajectory mm-hmm. becomes this fluid intelligence that relates mm-hmm. to the system that we're in, the room, the people, whatever. And if the embeddedness of that awareness or that consciousness, right, begins mm-hmm. to be something that is an anchoring sensory frame that we return to over and over again as leaders, as teachers, as followers of attention mm-hmm. and energy, right? Then this quality of the new gets lifted up into the inquiry process. It's not the grasping or the what else kind of thing, but it's the permeability of the consciousness and its impermanence, right? If we go to the mm-hmm. Buddhist kind of awareness, yet from an emerging leadership awareness, naming it as a fluidity, the non-dual, the coming and going, 75%, however we understand that, could you please say a little bit, particularly in current context here in this COVID gifting that the universe has given us, that this confidence that I hear arising in you as you put language, right? And as I have observed, the confidence, and but confident action that really relates to sustaining the being in the inquiry of yoga, yet also a fluency of your agency that moves something forward. So I'm wondering if you could talk about how that happened with some of the things that you've created, crystallized in the world. I'm thinking of book or online, actually came into my mind. You don't have to talk about that, but. Let it arise.
So for me, confidence is this sense of trusting myself and not trusting that I know what's right or I know what's wrong or that I know a piece of information, because all of that is constantly changing. And that's why there's been this me to we trajectory, because I don't know. I don't know. But I'm confident in my ability to listen to what's coming forward, and that whatever is arising and coming forward is something to follow, and that there is wisdom there.
Beautiful.
So in terms of creating things, I mean, right now, particularly with the COVID and the quarantine, there's been this sense that everything needs to change. And I'm going to say as well that there has been this, we've been on a trajectory of things need to change. We can't keep doing things the way they are, and it's not working. And, I've been saying for years, the yoga studio model is dead. It's just dead. It's not really working the way it once worked, if it ever worked. And the way we're behaving environmentally in the world is dead. It needs to change. It's killing us. It's literally killing us. And so here we are with this virus that has forced us to step back and to stay home. And there's been this grieving process of, I can't do things the way that I have been doing things, and I'm being forced into a change. Change is always stressful, but I'm being forced into a change. So I really felt that for myself. And I've said a couple of times, hey, I really wish that this happened in, December or January when I was writing the book, when I would have loved the ability to stay home. But I also see how this grief and this need to just be with me and be still has been a place of, you need to gestate and not create right now. This sense of creating needs to cease for a moment. And it did. And it's been shifting now into the sense of greater creativity. Tori Amos says, we need to out-create the darkness. And the sense that darkness creates, Rama talks about darkness being solid and dense and lightness being diffuse. And so light has to work harder than dark, because light is diffuse and dark is so dense and congealed together. So the darkness in the world, it literally, it does an action, and that action has a lot of growth around it. And that this sense of out-creating that Tori is talking about, which took me a long time to, what is she really talking about? She's talking about the creativity of, what are you creating and bringing forth into the world, and how are you creating that, and how does that serve this sense of light coming together. And Rama always talks about the light is diffuse and we need to bring it together. They're both talking about the same thing. Different words, but the same thing. So in this sense of being alone, one, my lifeline has been, I've been doing these daily live streams during the week. That's been my lifeline. It's what gets me out of bed in the morning. It's been what helps me feel connected. And that has started to shift into, what do people need right now? What am I hearing from people about what they need? And how can I now bring that into, and it's congealing into some online coursework of life skills. Mm-hmm. Because as yoga skills, as life skills, because what am I seeing and hearing from people so much? A significant lack of life skills. And I'm not going to be the person to teach you how to follow a budget. Sorry, that's not going to happen for me, for us. But I can teach you how to manage your stress. I can teach you how to manage your sadness, your grief, so that you can move forward.
So I just want to show you what you were doing with your hand, bringing the light, and then you brought it right in, and you touched your heart area, and then you spoke about it going back out when you talked about your new. So that quality of that self-reflexive process, that self-reflection, that happens organically, biopsychophysiologically. When we get into conversation like this, it shows up as a living thing. So I just want to honor that very embodied intelligence in you. But also, you know, we now enter what is resilience. You know, that's a whole nother conversation. And what a beautiful entry to your next, I want to call it picture book or something, because it's more like that than a field book, you know? Mm-hmm. So unfortunately we have to stop now, my dear. Yeah.
Well, I just want to say real quick that made me cry, because it's a very real example of my body talking, because I'm thinking, I'm just using my hands to try and get the words out.
That's right. And so that's what I've learned about the who I am in the world, Rose, during all these. I'm the mirror that somehow through my generative listening, through my body mind, I somehow can shape it so that, yes, there's more here. We both know this, but I have to go.
Always, I know. Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you.
Have a good session.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.